We're going to go ahead and get started. So welcome everybody to this public forum for the finalist candidates for the Wrangell Superintendent. My name is Tiffany Jackson. I'm joined by Joanne Henderson. We are search consultants with the Association of Alaska School Boards. We'll be here helping to facilitate this conversation this evening. We wanted to point out that you may have seen the press release, which indicated that there were four finalists. We did have one candidate step down due to personal reasons. So we are down to our three finalists for this position that you'll hear from tonight. The process tonight is we have 12 questions. Hopefully we'll get to them all. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer the questions. Joanne will be keeping time. So after 2 minutes, you'll hear a little ding, and that's your cue to wrap up your comments, and then we'll move on. We will be rotating who starts first each question. And I think that's pretty much it. Any questions before we get started?
No, that sounds great.
All right, so go ahead and jump in. I guess I should introduce our three candidates. With us here tonight, we have Joseph Aldridge. He is currently the superintendent at Columbia Union School District in California. We have William Burr, currently the assistant superintendent in Delta Greeley School District in Alaska. And Ralph Watkins, currently the superintendent principal in Hoonah City School District in Alaska. So we're so glad that you were all able to join us this evening. We're gonna go ahead and jump in. And so for this first question, the rotation will be Bill, Joseph, Ralph. So Bill, what sparked your interest in this job and in moving to Wrangell, a small community in Southeast Alaska where boats and planes are the only access in and out? What excites you and what worries you?
Well, what excited me is I did spend a number of years out on the Aleutians, and I really fell in love with the ocean. I've been in the interior without the ocean here for the last 14 years, and I didn't know how much I would miss it until I was somewhere else. I'm also looking at Wrangell School District has high test scores. They have long-term staff. They have a lot of opportunities to take what is working and advance on it. So they have a number of abilities to build as a community in a small community, as well as opportunities to go outside of the school itself and join that small town feel. I've been on an island. I've been on boat and plane entrance only. So that's actually a plus for me while I'm there. So what scares me is the moving up. We've just had a huge change to our educational system, and that educational system is going to have to adapt very rapidly. So we've had a year of mixed educational tactics, and the schools in Wrangell had it down. They had very, very good teachers, process, longevity, and where we go from here is exciting, but is also keeping my head spinning.
Thank you. Joe?
All right. So what excites me about coming to Wrangell is just the idea of the concept of coming there, coming to a beautiful place filled with, you know, new experiences for me and my family. I'm the father of two girls, and they're amazing, and they want to go out and explore the world with me and my wife. And so we're really excited about those opportunities personally. From a professional standpoint, I feel like I love small school districts. That's where I've spent most of my time throughout my life. And I can't imagine a prettier place than Wrangell to do that. My interest here, I had a friend of mine who's like, why don't you think about Alaska? He had been a superintendent at one time in Alaska. And he'd said, you know, you're going to love it. It's beautiful. And the more I researched it, the more I thought, oh my goodness, I think he's absolutely right. I've been in remote places before. I was out on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona for 3 years and had an absolutely wonderful time, and still have people there that I call family. And so I'm not so worried about the isolation. I know it'll be a little different, but I think it'll be a very good different for us. concerns, just making sure that I bring the best to Wrangell that I possibly can, that I present and meet the needs of the community. I have very high expectations of myself, and I really expect that the community will hold me to that. Also, my only other concern is just making sure that my family can thrive there. And I believe that they can. Everything I've seen is that they can, but there's always that little bit of anxiety anytime something like this comes along. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity, and I'm very excited.
Thank you. Ralph?
So this is not my first attempt at trying to get to Wrangell. I've applied to the Wrangell School District as a principal 7 years ago when Pat Mayer was a superintendent. He decided to go a different route, not sure why. And so I'm in Southeast Alaska currently. I've been to Wrangell several times. I have connections there in Wrangell. Wrangell is a Tlingit community like Huna. There are connections between our two places. I love the Tlingit people and the Tlingit culture. It's important to me. Thinking about coming to Wrangell to me is exciting, just because of the time that I spent there working in partnership with some of your teachers and previous administrators. Wrangell is not just a beautiful place, but it's a thriving school district. Like many of our Southeast Alaska schools, we've been faced with all types of challenges, with discontinuation of ferry service and limited flights and COVID, and there's just been so much. But the Wrangell School District continues to thrive because of the continuity of leadership. And so that excites me that you have a board that recognizes the importance of the superintendency and the leadership of the district, and I want to be a part of that. I'm used to being in small communities and Southeast Alaska. The weather doesn't bother me. I love the ferry rides. I have an Alaska mileage number, so I'm good that way. What worries me? Not much worries me about the move. I do have a family. I have two children. I have a daughter who will be a senior, son who will be a freshman next year. I want to make sure that they're in a place, like Joe mentioned, where my children can thrive. And that's important to me. But I believe that as a school leader, it's my responsibility to ensure that not just my kids can thrive, but all kids can thrive. And so if I come to Wrangell, my kids will be coming with me. So there's another reason for me to ensure that the school system, that we provide a quality education for every kid every day.
However you guys want it to be.
Thank you. Question two, we'll start with Joe and then Ralph and then Bill. Please provide an example of how you've improved morale, cohesion, and effectiveness on your team.
All right. So let's see. A very recent example of this is we're fortunate enough that our teachers are able to get the vaccine. So we had the first round vaccine, and folks were a little scared going into it, and we were able to, I was able to go around and meet with folks and just talk through any concerns they have. Obviously, we're in person school as well, and so that was a really nice thing to be able to go and do. But the first round really wasn't the concern. It's really as we're coming up to the second round, which we have coming up next week, actually on Tuesday. And so what we've done to prepare for this and really support my team around that is to I created little bags for each of my staff members who are going to get the vaccine, knowing that the next day they're not going to feel great. That's been the number one side effect that everyone's talked about. just to say, hey, I'm thinking of you. Here's a little, some tissues, some chicken soup, that kind of thing. So that hopefully as if this does hit you the way that it's hit some people, that you have this type of support there, just a little something. Also, we were able to ask the school board to go ahead and be proactive in planning and take that day as a distance learning day for our students, because it's likely that enough staff are going to be impacted by it that they're not going to necessarily be at their best for our students. Those actions have really been able to support the morale of my teachers in this year when morale has been a difficult thing to maintain, just because of all the challenges that have been thrown at all of us in education this year. So I'm really excited about those opportunities. I'm excited about the opportunities I've had to support my staff and bringing them up from the previous superintendent in my position now was dismissed by the board mid-year and left a very large deficit. So I came into some real morale challenges initially. I can say as I'm leaving this position that the number one thing that my people have told the search consultant they want is, we just want another Joe. And so that, I take that as a huge compliment, that the morale has been greatly improved from where it was when I came in. So.
Thank you. Ralph?
I think that's a great question. I mean, COVID has really provided a lot of opportunity for us to build relationship. I always tell my teachers, kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. But that same saying goes to your staff. You know, being the superintendent doesn't change the need to build relationship. So that's one way that I've done that. You know, I've worked to build relationships with my staff and amongst our staff. And probably one of the most important ways is empowering my staff. You know, I came into a district where there was a lot of turnover. My first year here, we, of our 13 teachers, 8 were brand new. The second year I was here, the third year I was here, we went through another large turnover of staff. And so constantly bringing in new people is always upsetting to the balance of your system. So what you have to do is you have to put in structures that outlast people, you know, rituals and traditions that people can become a part of. And by empowering teachers through shared leadership builds trust. And once you build that trust, then it's easy to build that cohesion. So the first thing I do is I really work to build relationships with my teachers that work to build that trust and to empower them. And COVID has just been an example of that. We were able to implement a school-wide COVID screening system, testing system. We've been in school the whole time. We have a dynamic Smart Start planning team that's always on the ball, keeping our community and our board and keeping us all informed. And that type of power, and power is maybe the wrong word, but that type of shared leadership lets the staff know, from our classified staff to our certified staff, that we're in this together, that when I succeed or when you succeed, we all succeed. And that type of team cohesion is what makes coming to work every day a joy for me and for my staff. You know, you can see it the way they greet and talk to our students and the way our kids respond and the connection that we all have. And the idea of leaving is not, it makes me sad, but I will always be connected to Huna and to my families here and to my students here, because we built a relationship that extends beyond just what happens in our school building during our school day.
Thank you. And Bill.
Well, I have two. First, I've got two of the areas that are kind of the hidden areas, the maintenance department and the IT department. Sometimes I've classified them as the invisible workers. And sometimes they had felt that. So I worked very hard with both groups to play more of a role of being visible, so that they're communicating their when they do something and they get praise, that they actually take it. And that has been that was a difficulty until they actually got the feeling that what they were doing was important. If they came in early and plowed up the teacher parking lot after a heavy snow, and they did it early and they got that response, they actually took it to heart. So the next time they were adding to it. And that raised their morale across the board. During COVID, I got all of our custodians, who usually are under our principal, got put under me so that we could prepare for getting buildings clean and getting our students back. We were lucky enough to have our students in buildings most of the time. And we did that by having to add a lot more work and processes, and how often things had to be cleaned, how they were cleaned, what they used, including new electrostatic sprayers that were always going to be 1 week away. So after I talked to the custodians and said, "They're coming, I assure you they're coming, I've been guaranteed." And then 3 weeks later, they haven't been built at the factory is the next message, rather than they're going to be here. But when they finally did arrive, I rolled them into the gym where we were all 6 feet apart, and I let all of them spray water on the floor, which for a custodian is very difficult. But I let them use the sprayer and roll it around and spray down things and say, "This is what it's going to do. This, you're not going to have massive puddles of everything." But they had a little bit of fun. And I thought, there are always going to be a few that don't actually participate. They're, "No, I'm not going to do that. I know how these work." All of them did. They all took their turn, handed it off to the next person, and then they sprayed, even if it was grudgingly that they were doing it. I guess I had three. And the third one is, we had a number of custodial outages during the day. Frantically, we had to get people, because we were in yellow, lunches were in classrooms, there was nobody to pick up the food. And I had always told them, and tried to live up to it, that I will do that also. So I rushed to the elementary, put on my mask, and hauled garbage for the entire lunch period, as well as recess, so that those students who had lunches in the rooms and meeting our guidelines could still have it and not have filled trash cans. So I've always said that if I won't do it, then it's very hard for me to ask you to. So I got some responses from that, but there was no question that I was willing to do it. And that goes a long ways when you're willing to put yourself out. Same with professional development. I'm in front of everybody, and I'm the teacher, and they get to rate me. They get to evaluate, and they get to go, "Uh-huh, yeah, see?" Every day I'm up in front of my students and I'm giving that information, but I'm willing to do it. And that's what I like to do. I like providing that information. And at heart, no matter what position I've been in, I'm a teacher. And that really tries to get that look of this is something that we're all in and we're all able to do and we're all willing to do it. And that is great cohesion.
Thank you. For the next question, we'll start with Ralph and then go to Bill and Joe after. What do you think the role of extracurricular activities should be in the school system? Ralph, you're on mute.
Southeast Alaska is the basketball capital of the world. For those of you that don't know, many of our kids are in school to play basketball and to do other things. And for a long time, extracurricular activities were kind of downplayed. Like, "We're here to teach. We're here to make sure you learn to read and write." But we have to recognize that kids find joy in that. That engages them. And if you can't meet them where they are, then you're not going to meet them. And so for those kids that love the extracurricular activities, we make sure that we provide them. We're fortunate to be in a community where our municipality has drafted an ordinance where 1% of our excise tax goes to the school district to support activities. So our families aren't tasked with trying to raise money for travel or for uniforms, because our municipality values that. And it's embedded in who we are, Hakustiai, who we are as Tlingit people. And that's important. So we have it structured. So there are several extracurricular activities, not just basketball, but arts, music, dance, native arts, native carving, native dancing. We have a wide variety of activities to meet as many of our kids as we can where they are. And so coming to a place like Rango where they may not have that luxury, you know, looking at extracurricular activities, for me, it's like, oh man, how are we gonna maintain that? Looking at the budget, you know, I was going, well, I don't see a lot there for that. So if it's important to the community, then we'll find a way to do it, because it's not about the activity, it's about how the activity meets the kids where they are, how it engages them. And school has to be more than just a place where kids come to read and write and do math. And so for 17 years, I owned a gymnastics, cheer, and dance studio. And so I am a coach and an athlete at heart. It's been a part of who I am forever. And so I know how much that saved me personally, having that. And I certainly would want to make sure that our kids have access to that. So in short, it's not something that is an afterthought or a side thought. It should be an integral part of our planning, because it provides another way to support and engage kids and meet them where they are.
Thank you. Bill?
Well, I think just the term extracurricular should fit right into our educational process, because it's extracurricular. So if anybody should want to have more learning, then it's the education system. And I think extracurriculars are absolutely important. And I think a variation of extracurriculars and what we define as extracurricular, the elementary in Wrangell, Evergreen, they have archery. I when I was reading that, I was thinking archery. I remember doing this as a child, and I was not very good at it, and moved into digital archery. And I thought, okay, I might be able to do that. I don't have to shoot at hay bales. And so I practiced a little bit of that, and I want to test my skills there. But I think extracurricular is beyond that. It's looking at what our students do beyond school, whether that's playing basketball, whether that's playing wrestling, whether that's archery, whether that's esports, whether that's going down and fishing. What are they really looking for, and what do they want to do that's going to help them along in the educational process? So sports can bring all kinds of leadership, but so can other non-sporting activities. What academics do we have that are interesting for our kids? The issue of money is always a concern. You can't really have a rivalry with Petersburg if you aren't able to travel anywhere, unless you're doing, well, esports would work. But when you're you can't have those rivalries that get kids excited, and you get team spirit, and you get the school is rooting for those individuals that may have problems elsewhere, or they may be the best students that we have. That's incredibly important to the school day. I heard the ring.
And I'm sorry if I'm missing up on this, because sometimes my phone keeps shutting off. So I hope that you're hearing it okay when it is coming through.
It's a little quiet, so just.
It is quiet.
So it's a little quiet.
Well, I don't know how to turn it up higher than that. It's up as loud for that ring, unless we get a more obnoxious one. But the good thing is that we have a little extra time since there's only three candidates, so that's good too.
All right, Joe, you're up next.
All right, thank you. So, you know, I look at extracurricular activities as sort of where the work and effort that we put in during the school day meets the community, and we get to show off the wonderful things that our kiddos can do, be it in athletics or be it in arts or at my school, we started a community garden. So we're able to benefit some of our folks that way. And it's just a wonderful way that we can get our community involved at our school, because so many of those things have started with an extracurricular, hey, let's do a little club. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing this person wanting to come in and support kids during the school day as a part of our curriculum as well. And some of those beautiful relationships that just blossom out of that ability to say, hey, you've got an interest in this, and I've got this group of kids who are super interested in this. An example of this that I've had at my school, I went out to the community and I realized my school really had a lot of students who were interested in following STEM paths, but we didn't have a lot of support for it within the school, and we didn't have a lot of money either. So I went out and asked, talked to all the Rotary clubs and everybody else in the community to see, and begged and borrowed and got all enough together to buy a couple of 3D printers and a laser cutter for this program that now we've got a science club at the school, and we've got kids who are really going to use that and get much better at it than I ever could, but I at least had the interest to get them going with it. The community came out and they provided over $25,000 worth of equipment and support and financial support to also be able to take that STEAM room and take it from a extracurricular activity out to even support a teacher coming into the room in the evenings. Unfortunately, COVID came in right as we were about to start all this, and we weren't able to get that teacher to have community members coming in, but everything's set up, so we're ready to do that as soon as we can. I'm just excited about all the opportunities that extracurricular and co-curricular activities bring for those interactions.
Thank you. Excuse me. I did want to highlight that we did have the school board present with us. I went and I looked at the participants list, and they're not interacting with us tonight, but they are present and observing. And that's Aaron Angerman, David Wilson, Cindy Crary, Patty Gilbert, and Laura Ballou. So we really appreciate the work that they've put into the superintendent search process. It is an intensive process on their part as well. So we appreciate them being here tonight. For the next question, we'll start with Bill and then go to Joe and Ralph. And it's a little long, so I have been putting the questions in the chat box after I ask them. Think for a moment about your leadership style. Please give an example of when you've led a team through an initiative. How would you define your leadership style during this work? And how did you develop relationships with staff members to develop buy-in? You're on mute, Bill.
So I'll take a curriculum incident. So I got faced with having to put a number of curriculums together very, very rapidly. When I came to Delta Greeley, I was an itinerant principal of one of them was the Delta Cyber School. Delta Cyber School had a number of teachers, was teaching a vast number of courses, and we had to get curriculum approved by the school board as well as by the state so that we could continue teaching the classes. And although the year had already started, we were in a rapid path to do it. So from a leadership style, we know what we have to do. I laid out the directions and how it was going to have to be done. So it was time frame. It was step by step, as well as we're a team. We have to work together. This is not my job. This is not individual's job. This is everything. And really, the if we put together good classes, if those are approved, then our students are going to benefit. We were able to do quite exciting things. So we were given the ability to write our own classes, write our own curriculum, but we needed to do it in a format that would be accepted. So the team itself came together, although there was the point of we have to pass through. The team started working. They started working with each other. They started sharing with each other. They knew the process that they wanted to accomplish and the goal that they were going to have of teaching these classes that they were excited about, and they would have fun, and they would have these students involved. Through that process, which was right at the beginning of the year, we developed a lot of communication skills, and those communication skills benefited everyone. I knew what the classes were. They knew what the classes were. They knew that they could talk to me. They knew my leadership style and how to communicate back and forth. And we got them all passed. Not only did we get them through the district, but we got them through the state. And we had kids enrolled and doing new things. The teachers were excited. I was excited. And they had truly learned who I was very rapidly. And that communication continued. So even after I moved to a different position, I still knew the people who were there. The communication was still there. And that developed the buy-in. They knew that I was there for the right reason, and that they knew that they could talk to me, and that I was going to communicate direct, but real aspects.
Thank you. Joe?
All right. So when I first came into my current position, I attended a training with some of my staff, and one of the topics was around universal design for learning and the multi-tiered systems of support. A core group of my staff really showed an interest. About five staff members out of a staff of 25 showed a strong, strong interest in pursuing universal design for learning as an initiative. And so we started off very small with those five teachers, and we jumped in right off and did a book study, working with some of Katie Novak's work and really trying to get our heads around exactly what this concept was and really start to implement that. And so it was nice to be able to support a small group of teachers as they're going through an implementation that we hope to then and did successfully then take the next year out to the entire staff, and were able to provide some basic training in that. I've got three teachers who became certified, so they can actually lead the introduction to universal design for learning as a part of this process. After we brought it out and trained the staff in it, then the next year, which happened to be last year, I was able to secure funding to provide one-to-one coaching in the principles of universal design for learning for all of my teachers through a virtual coaching platform. And it was extremely successful. All the teachers reported feeling very well supported as they were implementing that. Through that, my leadership style was really very relational, very much trying to build those relationships and understand, help the teachers understand how to build those relationships with their students as well, was super important as a part of this work, because there's a lot of trust that goes into that. And the buy-in was developed in that I asked the teachers to go out and actually take a risk. But I was also told them that it's a safe risk, that I will help them through that. If they fail, that's okay. That means we're going to learn something from that. And we're going to take that forward and keep moving with it. And I, at the same time, was saying, hey, this is all new to me as well. And if I fail, then I hope that you're going to give me some grace that I can move through this as well. And in building those relationships, we were able to really move forward with that. And I think the work is showing some success in our district at this point as well.
Thank you. Ralph, you're on mute again.
This is a really long question, but it's a good question. I think if I had to describe my leadership style, always it's transformational, I really work to empower the people that I lead, to give them voice, to make sure that they feel valued in whatever processes we're going through. And this is daily and when undertaking initiatives. 3 years ago, as a district, we embarked on becoming a trauma-informed school, trauma-responsive school. This was the new buzzword. I wanted to dig a little deeper into it. And I knew that from my own research that it was something that would be a benefit to our students. And so I took my entire staff, my entire certified and part of my classified staff to the RTI conference, where we had a great presenter on trauma, on trauma-informed schools and trauma-responsive schools. And then we came back and we kind of debriefed and kind of talked about that. And then I met with small groups of teachers to kind of talk about, what do you think this would look like in your classroom? What do you think this would look like in our school? To really let them kind of talk through this process, where I really was just the listener, really giving them that power and control, so they felt like, so they didn't feel like something was being done to them. Like, here's another thing that they're making us do. But we had an opportunity to kind of walk through this process together. And that was how I built relationships with them, by really giving them voice and learning how to keep my mouth closed and listen, not to always to try and be the smartest person in the room, but to give voice to others. And when the idea was theirs, that created the buy-in. So instead of me trying to get them to buy in, I presented an opportunity for them to get me to buy in. And once they started to see that we were on this journey together, then it just made a huge difference in our school. And we believe ourselves to be, as a district, a trauma responsive district. We revamped our processes and our procedures to really make sure that what we say we are is reflected in what we do. And that's owned by every teacher in every classroom. But that came through me not trying to be the smartest person in the room, to come up with an idea and with a vision and let that vision grow and develop through a group collaborative process. Relationship is all about trust, and trust is never earned top down. And so by allowing our teachers and our staff to work together, that creates the buy-in.
Thank you.